It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Holy shit, welcome back to American Loser. Sorry, it's been a month, guys. That's my fault, okay? If you're familiar with the show, my name is KP Burke. I'm a New Jersey-based comedian. On this show, what we do is I sit down with my dilf of a dad, Larry Burke. How are you, sir?
Hey, we're back, and it's good to be back.
Now, are you back permanently, or are you back?
Well, for a little while.
Yeah.
if you ask him, he came back just in time. If you ask my mother, they came back about a month too early. So. Old South Beach Larry goes down to South Beach, hangs out down there for a little while. You're always busy working and stuff, but you're back now. The Cahoon is back. We're back at a shared universe studio in Eatontown, New Jersey. Mike and Ming, always taking great care of us, man. I couldn't believe it, dude. I thought we were at least going to get one episode done in the span of this month, and my schedule is ridiculous.
Don't worry, man. I've been in here almost every day. Like, it's been crazy here.
Studio's growing, man. All right, man, I'm going to need a little loyalty card or something.
Yeah, to the point
like
that we got a new guy. We have another audio engineer. There's another Kahuna.
I did not say that.
No, there'll never be another Kahuna. Let's get something straight right there.
Well, thank you.
Well, the other guy is not an accomplished filmmaker. I know you got something exciting going on today, buddy. Talk to us about where you're going after this.
I'm going to Porta to watch one of my short films screen at the Hang On To Your Shorts Film Festival.
Down in Asbury Park, New Jersey, all right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, our boy's doing big things. Hey, by the way, where can people follow you on social media if they wanted to check you out, buddy?
So you can find me in a couple of places. I have two Twitter accounts, actually. I run one for my production company. And I run one for a personal one. So if you find Arcade Productions, Arcade Player One, or Christian Etrell on Twitter. And then if you want to find or look at the weird little content that I produce, you can find Arcade Productions on YouTube.
You are a man of many hats, I'll give you that.
So oh, yeah.
Go. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I find it more fun. I have fun being able to be like, yeah, I could do that, but then I could also, like, I could make something really childlike, but then I could switch it up and make a horror film like that.
It's called being fun. Bipolar, bud.
No, that's yeah, of course. Yeah,
no, you have a serious illness. I don't know which one of my careers is blowing up more. The podcast has been doing great. We're over the 10,000 listens. I'm so happy about that. We got some big changes coming to the podcast. Please, regular listeners, pay attention. We're going to make an announcement in the next couple of weeks here of how we're going to hook you guys up for being down since day one with us. But we are moving forward as we're trying to grow the audience for this thing. Now, my careers that are blowing up, Lawrence Patrick, are comedy. This is the best month I've ever had in terms of doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah, you've
right?
been around, bud.
So, congrats.
It was good, but also blowing up my excavation and grease trap cleaning career. So my day job I do, they've been so good to me, man. They really have. They've been amazing, to be honest. They've given me all this freaking time off to pick up these gigs. I played the Hard Rock down in Atlantic City with my friend Lynn Coplitz. She let me feature for her at Gotham Comedy Club, one of the best friggin' weekends of my life. And then one of my favorite comics, Bobby Kelly's been bringing me around a lot too, so I'm so fucking happy, dude. It's we played Mohegan Sun last week, and that's where I was. And you have never the stimulant that is waking up about 15 minutes before you have to check out before they charge you for the room. That is the fastest I've ever moved in my life. Went all the way from there right down to my buddy Scott Brennan's wedding. Okay, so I just walked into the wedding just in time to sit there and have a few, and then of course made it home in time for Game of Thrones. So. Life's crazy. Life comes at you fast. But what is today's date, Kahuna?
Cinco de Drinko? Cinco de Mayo?
Absolutely. Now, Kahuna is such a Star Wars nerd, Dad. When you were in the bathroom earlier, I said, hey, what's today, Kahuna? And he goes, may the 5th be with you? It's not Star Wars Day still, bud.
All right.
Now, my favorite joke I used to make about May the 4th, by the way, was, hey, do you know what today is? And a guy holding a lightsaber comes in and he goes, the 60th anniversary of the Kent State shootings.
Oh, no. They just fucking short circuit.
Yeah. Well, that was, it's true. That Kent State happened on May the 4th, too. So I think it's weird you guys all dress up and, you know.
No, I find it odd, too, because I always have no offense, but I always have those buzzkill friends that always share those type of memes and stuff like that on Facebook. So every May the 4th, he always shares that same meme. While you all are having fun with your lightsabers, remember this is what happened, actually. Which is fair, but like... Sometimes being a buzzkill is
and
just...
And being from the generation that lived through that, Four Dead in Ohio, was that was hard times, hard times.
I hear you. And if
anybody going to college at that time was like, holy shit, is this is really what we've come to, where the National Guard is shooting people?
It's, now, my biggest complaint is that it wasn't more than four.
well, okay. Let's jump right into the episode then, Kevin.
No, I'm trying to be dark here because this story on the surface seems like a very fun story. All right, we're going to talk about the history of Cinco de Mayo today. Okay. Now, what do you think Cinco de Mayo is, Coons?
Don't make me answer this stuff, man.
It doesn't matter, because everybody's wrong, by the way. I was wrong a lot. The only I don't know more than you. I just spent 20 minutes before the show writing.
I know jack shit, truthfully. Like,
if you had to guess, so if we have 4th of July here in America, what do you think Cinco de Mayo is?
Oh, Cinco de Mayo is like Independence Day in son of a bitch. It's just another form of Independence Day for another country.
Well, it's interesting because everybody thinks that's what it is, right? But it is not. Cinco de Mayo, a.k.a. the 5th of May, a.k.a. Cinco de Drinco, as you aforementioned, a.k.a. Mexican Independence Day. Wait, nope, that's wrong. No, Cinco de Mayo is not Mexican Independence Day. That's actually September 16th. Okay, so we will celebrate that as well here eventually at a Shared Universe studio.
It doesn't have the same ring as Cinco de Drinco.
No. It's a fun holiday, man. I didn't realize this, but we found this out in the research for it, that Cinco de Mayo in America generates roughly the similar numbers of beer sales as the Super Bowl. Okay, so this is a drinking holiday.
There's a lot of people using this as an excuse to let's go out and get wasted.
Yeah, which is why cousin Megan texted me, WTF, why am I not down there? So, so why are we here in Estados Unidos celebrating a Mexican holiday we don't fully understand? What's the occasion? Who was involved? How did it come here? And why does tequila make me want to get naked within 90 minutes of consumption? So without further ado, guys, we present one of my favorite titles for an episode so far. Cinco de Mayo, or How I Learned to Stop Caring and Love Cultural Appropriation.
Oh, God.
It's a reason to drink.
Yeah. So, well, as it turns out, LP, one of my favorites we did was Pancho Villa. So
Pancho was an interesting character of Mexican origin.
Well, how wild is Mexico in general, though? Because it's we have every 4 years we do a presidential election, and typically 8 years we change the presidency. There, it's like every 5 years they have a revolution that everybody gets killed in. So,
right.
Pretty wild people, man. But Mexican history is wild and often contentious. The American War with Mexico – now, this is where the timeline starts so we can try to figure this out. The American War with Mexico takes place 10 years after the Texas Revolution. Now, the Texas Revolution, that famously had the Alamo and Sam Houston's historic victory against Generalissimo, which you want to remind the viewers at home what a Generalissimo is, Dad?
Generalissimo Santa Anna. He was the head of the Mexican – well, he's got a checkered past as well because he's in power, he's out of power, he's back, he's forth, he's liberal, he's not, he's all over the place. He's kind of like the weather vane. Whichever which way the wind is blowing, that's what Mr. Santa Anna is going to be portraying.
He's about as bipolar as my films.
He's a wild character, man. But at the time, he was the Generalissimo. He had the famous incident over at the Alamo, which is the thing that as a kid was – I mean, I was a huge Davy Crockett fan. Still am.
Well, Walt Disney and everybody else too with the – remember the Alamo. There's a whole mystique to the Alamo, obviously, and the Republic Crockett of Texas.
Let's do a little foreshadowing here, LP. The Alamo is famous because it's known as what in terms of a military endeavor?
It was a last stand effort.
A last stand. Plug that away, listeners.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay.
We're going to get to another famous one.
Because we got
here.
Another one for you coming up.
Well, now what's crazy here, too, is that now Santa Anna also liked to call himself, he thought of it as a compliment, but people would also use it as an insult, that he was the Napoleon of the West. Okay. A little bit more foreshadowing here with that one. Now, Napoleon Bonaparte himself was, of course, long dead at this point, but that's name, it still evokes strong emotions. But in the actual war, the American-sanctioned war with Mexico, not the Texas Republic, not those bunch of, wild right. boys down south, which, God, I got to get to Texas before I die, man. I really do. I got to get out. I just want to booze it up and look at the Alamo. That's what I want to do. So, but Now, James K. Polk is the president during our time of the actual war with Mexico. The Americans had expanded westward, and the treaty ending the war forced Mexico to give away the rights to, you want to guess, Cahoons?
Mexico?
New Mexico.
New Mexico.
New Mexico. What,
well, get this. The original name of New Mexico was Santa Fe de Nuevo México, which is funny because now we just make it a state, New Mexico, and guess what the capital is?
Santa Fe.
So then we also made them give away the rights to Alta California, which was the Upper California. Okay. So we've got all sorts of crazy shit going on there. Now, the war with Mexico has
pretty much a good chunk of the Southwest. I mean,
oh, we expanded.
Good parts of Arizona, good parts of New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, all the way going up into parts of Colorado and going west into California. So we're talking a big swath of the United States is now no longer Mexico, but the United States.
Well, it's actually considered a very shameful thing still in the history of Mexico as they look at that war, because the exact quote, I believe, was that the loss of the war was the combination of America's insatiable ambition and Mexico's own weaknesses at the time. So they're not pretty happy with themselves. It wasn't really much of a fight. And what's crazy, too, is that this kind of sets the table for all the crazy things that are about to come here, because we've expanded that far. It's contentious. We'll say that. Mexico and America, still contentious to this day at some times. A lot of cool things. And, you know, so, I mean, we got friggin' football teams going down to Mexico City to play games this year.
Right.
You know, that's been happening for the last couple of years. Really cool stuff. But I think as Americans, we tend to think of Mexico as, you know, the actual part that borders us, the you know, kind of the more centrally located part of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
a little bit further removed from us. Pretty cool stuff. A lot of crazy shit going on there. And we're going to dive into probably what I think is the craziest story here as we get ready to come towards the end. But the president of Mexico at this time, which is, again, we're removed from the Alamo by 10 years before the actual war with Mexico starts. Now we're going to get into – we're essentially in for American history fans. We're coming up on Civil War time frame, okay? That's kind of where we are.
We're into the late 1850s, 1860s.
Right. So now the president of Mexico at the time of this story is Benito Juarez, who's going to have a valley named after him that's not really a great thing to have named after you. But
old voice, though.
Yeah. Good voice, guy.
Well, when you have the Juarez Valley, is also known as the Valley of, you know, it's the Juarez. It's like the capital of crime in all of Mexico. I mean, it's HBO did a killer documentary on that, man, pun intended. But Benito had what every business dreams of when he was running Mexico. What do you think that is?
Steady income.
Close.
Yeah.
European investors.
Yeah, the shark, oh, man. The Shark Tank situation.
That's right. I just picture Benito Juarez walking into the room. You know, they're playing the music up as he walks in and he just goes, who's looking to own 5% of Mexico for this amount of money?
But and Benito, too, he's also a local. He's not one of the aristocratic from the old Spanish days or something. He's one of the people type of thing. So, you know, that's the seesaw effect within Mexican politics is the back and forth, whether it's the aristocracy versus the people, and back and forth, you know.
So the hacienda
the
owners
and the have nots,
and the
right.
poor. There's no middle class in Mexico really at this time. That's another thing America deserves a lot of credit for, is the creation of, in a lot of ways. But anyway, the point of the story here today is that when you have these European investors, the problem with borrowing money from Britain, France, and Spain, those three countries, three superpowers of the day, is that eventually they're going to want it back. So,
yeah, typically when you take out a loan, they anticipate that you're going to pay it off.
That's Well, France at this time is under the rule of what is known as the Second French Empire. Real quick dissertation on that. So France is fascinating. France is, you know, under the monarchy, right? And then post-American Revolution, they are in such deep debt from going in, you know, the continuous wars with Britain and then aiding the United States, all these other things, that there's actually a peasant uprising, if you will, known as the French Revolution. And doesn't end really good for the aristocracy on that one. A lot of beheadings. And you know that we talk about the 4th of July here and what a beautiful break from England we had when we're still on good terms with them. You know what I mean? Like stay together for the kids kind of a thing.
Well, not initially, but yeah, eventually it's coming around.
Oh, yeah. It took a while.
And we had a little war of 1812 where we're still fighting the same guys that we thought we won our independence from. But
also, turn a lot of backroom deals and stuff like that going on. So it wasn't really fond memories there. But the point is we didn't start beheading everybody. And our revolution didn't end in something known as a reign of terror.
Right. We didn't start beheading everybody. Like, only some people. Right. Just some beheadings.
Right.
Well, so now the emperor that kind of takes France out of the reign of terror, if you will, is Napoleon Bonaparte. Now,
Napoleon the First. Mm-hmm. We got to let people know, too, that there were a number of different Napoleons. When you say
you're ready
Napoleon,
for this one here?
Go ahead.
You're not ready for this one. So. Now, the second French Empire is going to be the second time where they tried having a republic and it failed again, whatever, and then they move back into an emperor-type role. This time, the emperor is Napoleon III.
Okay,
he's consolidated power over in France. Now, Napoleons work like godfathers.
So you're talking about the time right now in France. It's Napoleon III.
And Napoleon III.
Napoleon III was not the offspring of Napoleon I.
He was a nephew, I believe. But now the key is that Napoleons work like Godfather. So Godfather 1, nobody can deny it, right?
He's a made man.
Yeah, Godfather 3 gets a little weird. So now in 1861, while America is distracted by its own civil war, which is, get this, oddly being fought on both sides by men who had served together in the United States Army in their war against Mexico just a few years earlier.
Right.
Okay.
When President Polk picked the fight with Mexico to start the war with Mexico— the United States at that point had a lot of military people that were involved in that war, and a lot of the leaders on both sides of the Confederacy and the Union in the American Civil War had served previously together in their war against Mexico. So, yeah.
Which is wild.
They all knew one another. Yeah. And on both sides, the Confederacy and the Union, they all knew one another. They probably went to West Point together or within, you know, years of separation. But anyhow, there was a familiarity with one another that was kind of unusual. That happens when it's brother against brother, as the Civil War is often portrayed as.
Also, when you sign up to go to war, you never imagine it's going to be to the guy to your immediate left or right. You know, I always think about that in boot camp, where I'm like, would I be fighting against my buddy Chris Hirth or my buddy Eric Condor?
Because they happen to be born someplace else, south of New Jersey. Right?
Would I have to fight the big kahuna? He could just step on me.
It's an agility game.
What are you trying to say?
Well, not for nothing now. The Second French Empire, as we talked about, is headed by Napoleon III. And Napoleon, he's actually one of the guys that's lending all this money over to Mexico. Mexico is not repaying its debts. Okay, they're not paying any sort of interest on the loans that they have out there and stuff. You got something I'll pay you.
No, and I was just going to say that, although Mexico went into debt with a lot of these European investors, when Benito Juarez came into power, he declared that, you know what, we're not paying it off because we're in such financial straits here that we're just going to call a moratorium on paying off our debts. And
yeah, so
the people that lent you the money, they found exception to that.
Yeah, Juarez did the classic. He kept changing his address, won't answer his cell phone if it's an 800 number, all sorts of shit. But in 1861, as we were saying, America is distracted because they're fighting their own civil war. Napoleon III launches an invasion of Mexico by a large French fleet and ground troops under the guise of protecting, quote, free trade. This is like if you miss enough student loan payments, kahuna, that the bill collector sends some goons to come move in with you for a little while.
Right. So. We're just going to take over your bedroom here, and we're going to be right next to you. No worries.
Well, as we said, too, now, America's busy fighting to preserve its own union, so it really can't enforce what's known as the Monroe Doctrine. Cahoons, it's all good if you don't, but do you know what the Monroe Doctrine is?
Man, no. I did not.
You paid no attention in history class in high school, did you?
No, I don't think we actually covered
cartoons.
I don't think we actually covered this Like, there's some things that I've realized that we really kind of just
That's why I love this podcast. Right. We're here to fix your history class because it was taught by uninteresting people in an uninteresting way, but this is the most fascinating shit ever.
Mr. Quick, not you. You probably didn't. You're good. I'm just making this known. If you're still out there, which I know you are, and if you ever listen to this podcast, you are the best. You are the best history teacher I ever had. Continue.
So now the Monroe Doctrine pretty much was just it was being put out by President Monroe, as you might guess, and it was the just pretty much a warning or letting people know, all the European powers, if you guys decide to move into any part of North or even Central and South America,
Western Hemisphere,
you move into the Western Hemisphere and try to colonize over here, we're gonna fuck your shit up.
we're taking sides, and
yeah, it's an act of aggression. You try building a little new France over here, we're gonna send your ass back, boys.
That's right.
But you're not really able to enforce that when you're at war with your own self.
Right.
Okay?
When you're fighting.
But was this something that was universally agreed upon? Like, even though they were fighting themselves, was everyone kind of like,
just
yeah, we hate
know.
Each other, but fuck France.
Well, prior to the Monroe Doctrine happened early in the 1800s. We're after the war, the Revolutionary War, where it's after the War of 1812, and Monroe writes this document that became known as the Monroe Document that said if anybody has any intentions of interfering with the Western Hemisphere, North and South America, the United States is jumping in on it because
it's just letting you know that there will be a reaction.
There will no longer be any European influences because
you step in the trap, you're going to get bit
within the Western Hemisphere. Yep. But now we're fighting. Now we're fighting one another during the Civil War. So it was really hard to put any kind of teeth to that.
Timing is everything.
When you're fighting your neighbor. Yeah.
Yeah, timing is everything, as you covered on that one, too. Because now Britain, France, and Spain, all three of whom had some sort of a coalition, if you will, or a colony of some sort within what is considered now the modern, the lower 48. We see these three guys come together. They form their own little version of the Avengers. And they're going to come over to Mexico and make President Juarez pay them back. Okay.
Right. I mean, Spain and England and, of course, France are saying, well, yeah, let's go over there and blockade their ports.
You know,
so they're not going to be able to trade with anybody until we get our money back.
Right. Now, they form a thing called the Convention of London in order to actually get this thing going. So the three of them, they are coming together on this one. But really soon, all right, this is where the dark side story starts to come through. Britain and Spain soon realize after landing down in Veracruz that Napoleon III has bigger plans in mind. He's not there to get his money back. He's there to take over the whole fucking country.
All right.
So a very ambitious man here. Now, Coons, did you have any questions before we move on this
No,
one?
No. I clarified myself. I
what?
Was, yeah, I was. I had a question, but then I was like, oh, that's what he was talking about.
So it gets crazy here. Now, like we said, we've covered some weird stories in the past where you don't quite know where the left-hand turn's coming in. This one is exclusively left-hand turns. This is navigating a circle in South Jersey. Okay.
So, oh God.
Once they realize that that there's going to be other more devious plans at play, Napoleon had struck a little side deal that he worked out with his ally and his relative by marriage, Maximilian I. Have you ever heard of Maximilian I?
Yes, actually, but I've heard the name before.
Well, I won't give it away here, but he is going to be the human interest part of this story because we want to explain the Cinco de Mayo
first.
Thing. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to explain the Cinco de Mayo thing here, but the bigger story overall, because there's a couple other weird things we're going to cover. But Maximilian is going to be our human interest piece of this story. So he is the current head at the time of our introduction to him. He's the current head of the Austrian Navy because he is the younger brother of Franz Joseph, Emperor of Austria. Okay, Max is very popular and well respected in his country. Outstanding, naval commander too. They always
A real popular guy, very well educated guy. Spoke like six different languages.
One of them was Spanish.
Yeah, he was a shining star kind of a thing. But unfortunately, he was brother number two. He had an older brother, so. With that whole royalty thing going on, the older brother, the big brother, got all the
so due to the line of secession, he was never going to actually be in power over unless something terrible happened, which wouldn't happen in Austria for another another 50 years. But so anyway, what winds up happening here is that he is being appealed to by the aristocrats in Mexico. They're already saying, like, hey, man, come on over here. Be our ruler, dude. It'd be great. Come on, we'll get you over here, build a whole new Anglo-Saxon thing. They wanted to create something that was a – and this is where the big divide comes in. So there is the aristocracy versus the peasants kind of a thing. There's the liberals versus the conservatives over in Mexico. There's a lot of people that don't like the idea of an Anglo-Saxon coming over from Austria to come be the leader of, you know, the Mexican people. They are considered Anglo-Saxons.
The Austrians?
Yes, you're looking at me funny.
Yeah, well, because he was Catholic.
Well, the Angles and the Saxons.
Okay.
So you're thinking WASP.
Okay.
So now that comes in important too here. So he is a Catholic. Now, Napoleon III, also a Catholic. Okay. And now you're going to create what literally the term Latin America comes from, this idea that they were going to create a Latin America where it was going to be. Because what language was spoken in the Catholic Church at this time, Ed?
Latin, right.
So the Pope signs off on a lot of this shit. He's all about it, man.
Yeah, but what's also interesting, or I found to be interesting, is too that in Mexico you had the aristocracy or the upper echelon, the people with the money who were running all these various haciendas that came back from when Spain ruled Mexico.
Which was what religion?
Catholic.
Yep.
Okay. And it was Juarez who was more on the liberal side representing the people, but all this aristocracy, the big money people, were looking to go back to a monarchy type of a thing where life was good and, you know, we were in control. And never mind.
I want to go back to the good old days.
The good old days when we were hot shit.
Make haciendas great.
And the peons
again.
Were the peons. Yeah. Right.
So, but now our boy Maximilian is he's very popular, like you said, Dad, and well respected. Loves a good adventure, though. So originally, he doesn't take the people up on this offer, although it definitely cues his interest if you're, you know, paying any attention to him or have any insight to his personality.
Yeah, he doesn't agree to the aristocracy making inroads to, you know, inviting him to come over to Mexico.
Well, you know where he goes instead, right? You told me this yesterday.
Mike, I don't remember.
Instead, Max doesn't originally take him up on the offer, Cahoons. He decides, he goes, no. But he's not going to stay in Austria either. He goes to Brazil on a flower, you know,
oh,
collecting
yeah,
mission
yeah.
or something, like some sort of botany thing.
Yeah.
Kate Lepus would be all about it. Cousin Kate.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, he was a very, very well-educated man. And he said that in his early days, in his upbringing and stuff, he'd be in school, you know, 35, 40 hours a week in school just – constantly being private tutored and everything else that and as I say, he had a grasp of six different languages, so he was no fool.
He's a very edumacated man.
A very edumacated man. Unfortunately, he just wasn't the number one son. He was the number two son. So
he's not going. Now you get an opportunity. You're told you'll never rule Austria in the Habsburg dynasty. All right, which is again, that's the whole crazy thing because Germany doesn't exist yet at this point. Still, right.
But you could possibly rule the country where people are chopping heads.
Yeah, but we're exactly. We're inviting you over to Mexico where you could we could make a country for you.
Now you're a blonde haired, blue eyed boy. All right, like myself. And they tell you, hey, we have an entire country full of Selma Hayeks. Right. Are you interested?
How about yes?
I believe his words upon accepting was spring break, 1864, baby. Let's get crazy.
That's right.
So now by the end of April here, I apologize. I jumped ahead for a second. Napoleon's forces are going to land in Veracruz in December 1861. So that's December 1861. So the tail end of 1861.
Yeah. Now Veracruz, too, is on the Gulf side of Mexico. It's the eastern side of Mexico. So just so people have an understanding, because that's going to come into play in a little bit here, too.
Again, the American way of looking at it, it's not necessarily ignorant. It's just we're not we don't study too much Mexican history
right.
in school, so you tend to think of Mexico as just that
right.
the crazy.
We get enough troubles yeah. with our own history, never mind
exactly
foreign it's history.
Or as a, there's a lot of interesting connections we can make here. But now Napoleon's forces are going to they land in Veracruz in 1861, and they're still with the British and the Spanish here. The three countries are going to operate together until April 9th, when upon seeing the big picture of Napoleon's plans. The Spanish and British fleets decide they're going to withdraw their forces, leaving France alone to conquer what was going to become, in their vision, Latin America.
Yeah, I mean, initially the British and the Spanish and the French made that agreement in London that they were going to blockade some of their ports.
Right.
And they weren't going to be landing any troops. But then France jumps in with Napoleon's III's directive that – we're gonna block Veracruz, but we're also gonna take over some other key seaports, and we're putting troops on the shore. So at that point,
can you picture the Duke of Wellington or pretty much anybody in the British military just sitting there and be like, "Oh, that's so crazy! This new Napoleon doesn't want to listen to anybody. Right. He's invading other countries."
Or he lied.
Isn't that wild?
You're right.
So. But yeah, they go ahead, like you're saying, there is a naval blockade. Everything's going on with that. Now, by the end of April, he's pretty much France is on their own over here. Now, the big thing, too, is that Napoleon strikes this deal with Maximilian. But the idea is that Maximilian's going to be running stuff in Mexico as long as he gets the okay from Napoleon. So there's the attempt for France to use Mexico as going to be like a colony of theirs, if you will. So it's a good sign. It's obviously a great time to have a foot, in the door over in North America.
Right.
The U.S. is at war with itself. You still got some crazy shit going. There's British Columbia. There's French Columbia. Yeah, I'm sorry, French Canada up there as well. So all sorts of wild shit. But by the end of April, the French forces are now completely alone in their invasion efforts. And so far, things have gone pretty easily here. The French ships blockaded the major ports, as you said. And as they're marching towards Mexico City, the Napoleon III has fielded one of the finest armies in the world here. So. And the general theory is Maximilian will soon be inserted as the puppet leader of Mexico, and Juarez, the president of Mexico, would be ousted. The religious aspect of this is like also kind of the big thing here. We're talking about the Catholics versus the Protestants, liberals versus conservatives, all that other shit. The intention was to unite Mexico as a Catholic country under France's influence. Now, a lot of the people were encouraging this, mostly the conservatives, because they thought this was a great chance for them to come back to the world stage, get a little bit more respect for Mexico going. You know, again, more things, more opportunities to bring in European investors. So,
yeah, and it was also it got the nod.
We have beautiful beaches. ignore the decapitated heads. That's all good. That's getting cleaned up tomorrow.
Spring break in Cancun, right?
What always makes you laugh? Yeah.
And it also by putting Maximilian in there, not only was the money's people looking for him to come in to take over. It also gave a much renewed strength with the Catholic Church, because back in the Spanish days when Spain was running things in Mexico, the Catholic Church had a very heavy influence, and a lot of the financing came through the Catholic Church. And
they got a little bit of money. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, in other words, they didn't have to go to foreign powers. They went to the Catholic Church to finance stuff. So they were all about inserting a Catholic monarch, if you will, into Mexico as well. So
wait, they went to the Catholic Church looking to fund?
Back in the Spanish rule days of Mexico, yeah, the Catholic Church was a heavy financier of the development of Mexico.
I wonder if they could fix Notre Dame themselves. Now.
Yeah.
Well, the theory I had a while ago was if the Catholic Church wanted to boost their numbers back, what they should do is take some of the money that they're worth and buy college football television rights in America. If you go to Mass on Sunday, you're allowed to watch the Saturday games. Okay.
That or introduce Buddy Christ. Ain't it, Pop?
Half the battle there, sir. Now, as we were talking about, the French force is completely on their own right now. The religious aspect is crazy because you want a separation between church and state on the liberal side. But the conservatives are like, dude, if we're a Catholic nation, France has our back, Spain will have our back for the most part. And when we can get the wizard and the pointy hat over in the Vatican
and
to sign
Austrians
off on us.
Too, or the the Habsburg.
We like the Austrians so much we just brought one in as our emperor.
Right.
So,
there you go.
But it's very interesting here. Now, the French forces at this time, and we are getting to a very important date in history, the French forces, because remember, France is on its own towards the end of April. So this is very, very early on here in the endeavor.
Right.
The French were led by, and I'm going to fuck this up a little bit because I'm a dumb kid from Jersey, but the French were led by Charles de Lancey, who, after a successful skirmish with Mexican forces, decided to attack their retreat towards the town of Puebla. Ever hear of the town of Puebla, Kahuna?
Yes.
So Lancey mistakenly thought the garrison at Puebla was friendly to the French Catholic invaders. This proved to be as bad of an idea as the time I bought a two-wheel drive pickup truck in Florida, because who needs four-wheel drive when you just bought a house? I was home within 10 months.
There's no snow in Florida. Why would you need four-wheel drive?
Oh, yeah, and then came home to a couple of the worst winters I'd ever seen. Okay. Lancey mistakenly used up the remains of his artillery, shelling the garrison, forcing his third infantry attack to go in unsupported. So what you want to do when you have artillery is You bomb the holy hell out of them, especially in a siege effort, before you send your troops in. That way they're still reeling from the fact that you just literally drop, you know, bombs on them. And then the infantry is not going to be picked apart quite as easily. Okay. But he fucks up, uses all the artillery. Now the third group of his infantry, the third charge, if you will, is going in unsupported. So you've already lost your one major advantage in having the artillery here. But now the superior French forces were met with heavy resistance by the Mexican troops as well as the garrison occupants. Lawrence was retreating into a distant position. Now this battle is happening on, you want to guess what day, Cajuns?
Cinco de Mayo.
The 5th of May. That is correct.
Cinco de Mayo.
So
Cinco de Trinco.
It's also, this is why it is a huge, huge holiday for them. Now, in Mexico, it's considered a minor holiday. The only town that really celebrates it still is the town of Puebla.
So we just put some embellishment on it to just get some drinking days in there.
Absolutely.
Well, here's what you got to think about.
The American way.
So, I know you're not a big baseball fan. I know that, right?
Mild, actually.
Tiny. Okay, so yeah. 2000 World Series. You got the Subway Series. It's Yankees versus Mets. Now, in our household, we're diehard Yankees fans. Just been that way since we were born. But my buddies who are Mets fans, for them to win one game of that World Series against the Yankees dynasty is still something that they're proud of because they won one game. So essentially what this is Mexico celebrates the time that the Mets beat the Yankees in one game of the World Series. That's right, baby. We avoided the sweep. You ain't getting us.
But it was just one time. We avoided the sweep.
So, but here's what's crazy. They go ahead and they actually as they're forcing the French forces to retreat, Lawrence Say takes a note and realizes that he's lost nearly 500 men, and the Mexican garrison forces have lost less than 100 people total. I'm talking casualties, not deaths.
Right.
Because a casualty just means you're not mustering up the next day. So, yeah, less than 100 and that's pretty good numbers.
Right.
Okay. If this was the stock market,
yeah. Yeah. I'll take that.
So the surprising victory for the Mexican forces inspires this sense of national pride. The underdogs had come out on top. Crazy thing. You now have given the Mexicans something to fight for, okay? There's this sense of Mexican nationalism all of a sudden where, hey, maybe we don't want to bring a guy from Austria over from Europe to rule us. Maybe we don't want the wizard in the pointy hat over in the Vatican to control whether or not, you know, we're allowed to use condoms. So.
I don't think that was really the situation right then.
Also, you need to clarify what kind of wizards in pointy hats. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well played, Kahuna. Oh, my God. I thought I was being dark today, but no, apparently not. Now, those French forces, they did have to retreat and regroup. The Mexicans had won the day. They stood up to one of the big powers in the world that had plagued them in the past. President Juarez is ecstatic at the news. But these good times, they're not going to last for very long, are they, Larry?
No, they're really not. Again, it's a matter of supply as well as anything else. Just as Lorenz ran out of ammunition to continue with the artillery shelling, that was only the start of his supply difficulties. Mm-hmm. Because, again, most of the stuff, most of his supplies and troops and munitions and everything else is going to be landing at Veracruz. And all of Mexico is really divided between the haves and the have-nots. So you've got Juarez, who is the president of Mexico, and now is being told, no, we're going to appoint this other guy, Maximilian, as the new emperor. He didn't just hand over the throne or hand over the reins to run in the country. He's fighting this whole thing. But the people within Veracruz are more pro Juarez than they are pro French.
Right. Well,
so you're trying to land your goods and materials in a port that's really not too friendly to you being there to begin with. And now they declared Mexico City, which is on the opposite side of the country almost, to be their capital. So now you've got to land your supplies at Veracruz and then somehow or other get them across the country to the other side to where you're going to declare your capital, and you're going through territory that's probably one of the most inhospitable places on earth with swamps and all kinds of disease-carrying critters and snakes and swamps and malaria.
Lions, tigers, and, bears, oh my.
Yeah, absolutely, the, absolutely. So
this ain't no nice yellow brick road.
You know, they had very great difficulty with supplies. So you got this foreign invader that's now cannot be reinforced or resupplied type of thing, and makes life a little difficult.
You made a joke earlier that this would you made an Avengers joke earlier, and it really does hold up. Like, this would actually make kind of a cool Avengers type movie.
You ain't seen shit yet.
Oh no. Yeah. It keeps going, doesn't it?
So there's this notion in America, and I've laughed at it a bunch. There's some really funny you know, French people are pussy jokes out there. And France and America, not the happiest of compatriots, but they are – we have more in common with them than we don't, all right? But there's this notion that the French are pussies, and I the more you read, the more you realize that is just not the case.
French audience, we love you.
So I would love a French audience.
Do we have one?
No. We do well in England, though. I love that. I love all the UK listeners. I actually love all the listeners in general, if I'm being honest. That's why it's so good.
Thank you so much for listening. But y'all rock.
So you got Napoleon, pretty badass dude. Okay. Then you got the French trappers that were coming over here, and they were able to live amongst the Indians and stuff like that. There's a lot of really cool stuff in French history, and they have a different way of doing things because we get our history from the British side of things.
Right.
And they have the same kind of feelings about the French that we do. However, so
– and they're neighbors.
Napoleon. In World War II, the French underground. I mean, these are cool fucking people now. The most badass troops you can possibly think of. I think of Green Berets. I think of Delta Force. I think of the British SAS. There's all sorts of really good – the winged hussars of medieval Poland, if you will. But
still the most badass costume.
There's a certain kind of French troops are on the ground now, LP. Mexico's not dealing with the normal French military. They're dealing with you want to explain to the people who we're dealing with here?
Part of the French forces that were put ashore in Mexico were the Foreign Legion.
The French Foreign Legion?
Yeah, the French Foreign Legion, which was just a group of total badasses that to be part of the Foreign Legion – you were volunteered, and they came from a lot of other places around the world. They were primarily mercenaries that were not necessarily French citizens. They had a wide swath of various nationalities. But
well, the gambit in the old movies was if you murdered somebody in – it'd be like an American that would run away or something, or a guy in Belgium
right.
would run into problems – he would disappear because he just murdered somebody and then go join the French Foreign Legions.
Guys that would rather cut you up rather than say hello. Those are the type of people that – there were no background checks. We'll put it to you that way. There were no background checks in order to enlist within the Foreign Legion, and everybody's backstory was kept a secret type of a thing. If you survived boot camp, right, if you survived their basic training, you're in. But it was so brutal that guys would just take themselves out. They would desert or just run away and just fade into the into the darkness kind of a thing. So what was left was a core of total badass people.
This is France's Spartans, right. Pretty much. That's what we're dealing with.
And what was interesting, too, is that the Foreign Legion didn't really pledge themselves to France. They pledged themselves to themselves. So in other words, it was all about allegiance to the Legion rather than an allegiance to any one particular foreign nation type of a thing. So they're sending in the special forces. They're sending in the Green Beret because in order to get supplies to the French army, they got to go down this one road that was totally inhospitable. It's being constantly attacked by the Mexican forces, bandits, you know, cutthroats, thieves, everything else, going through some of the worst country or territory type of a thing. So they would set up these various stations along the way, little tiny garrisons along the way to try to guard this highway that was became the major supply route coming out of Veracruz.
So now you got the absolute French badasses sitting there, and you got a small detachment of them,
right?
That are going to absolutely become legendary. This is Frenchly. The Foreign Legion was already badass, all right, but this is where they. I mean, this is their Alamo, like we were talking about that last stand we mentioned earlier. So now, if you go by the Spanish pronunciation, again, I'm going to slaughter this, but Cameroon or Cameroon, depending on which one you want to look at. So, Dad, quick question for you. What the fuck is the Battle of Cameroon?
Well, that was a battle that just by coinkydink was about a year after Cinco de Mayo, all right? You have this small detachment. The French forces are being decimated by disease and dysentery and everything else.
Montezuma's revenge.
Montezuma's revenge, big time. But on the 30th of April in 1863, just about a year after.
Excellent point.
Just about a year after the big Cinco de Mayo celebration, this Captain Jean d'Anjou.
You got it, by the way. For the people listening right now, you didn't realize this. Larry and I drove down together, and he was practicing in the car. That was perfect. Jean d'Anjou.
He is a total badass himself that he served prior to serving in Mexico in Algeria for the French, had his hand blown off, then decides to have a prosthetic wooden hand carved that he would attach to his
damn alligator bit his hand off.
Missing limb, right? That's right.
Saw in the hips.
But there's a huge battle that goes on for like 8 to 10 hours that you have these 65 foreign legionnaires fighting against anywhere between 2,000 and 3,000 Mexicans, held them off for 8 hours.
Say those numbers again, just for people who, because this is the mind blowing one.
Yeah, it was anywhere, depending on where you read or who you research, anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 Mexican forces
versus
65 French foreign legionnaires. There was 62 enlisted and 3 officers, one of which was Captain Jean d'Anjou.
Now they had
how
also,
many were left?
We're getting there. So in the
you got a Tarantino vibe to you, where you want
I want to know.
You want the end to be the middle, and then we can unpack the end at the end with
right.
the middle. But now they had stopped too. They were marching in, and they were stopping for their morning coffee before this even happened.
Right. Well, they were marching along the road looking for the Mexican forces to ensure the safe passage of the supplies that were now being brought up, and. They had gone – by the end of the day, they had gone over 24 hours without having anything to eat or drink because they just stopped for a well-needed rest, and they decided they're going to make morning coffee, if you will. And
I just think about this all the time. Whenever I'm traveling with one of my great friends who's a headliner, she makes me stop. Like, she goes, if you see coffee, we need coffee. And then she's like – and if you see a sandwich shop, we need it. And I was like, you would never make it in the French Foreign Legion. Never. Not once.
So anyhow, just they're on the lookout for the bad guys, to their viewpoint, the bandits, the Mexicans, whoever happens to be out there. They just stop for morning coffee. They just get the coffee going and like, oh, shit, bad news is on the doorstep because, off on the horizon they see – some Mexican cavalry forming up.
Get this, so, hussars, to a degree, because the hussars were the lancers, okay? So there's Mexican lancers and also Mexican dragoons.
Right.
So that's going to be the cavalry with the short sword that we've come to know them as, okay? But they also have the guys with the lancers on there too. And get this, by the way, Cahoons, on the Austrian side, there are hussars, okay? So not the winged hussars of the Polish descent with the giant but the idea of the hussars being, what Casimir Pulaski brought to the United States cavalry, it's very similar to that because Austria and Poland, they got some shit in common, okay? super, just the most attractive people ever. But anyway, so now they're surrounded pretty much by these guys.
Yeah, these guys come riding, the Mexican cavalry come riding in on them. Captain Jean orders a square defense. In other words, everybody's like back to back with him in the middle, and they fire in volley after volley. They chase these guys off, but then they form a retreat, if you will, to an abandoned hacienda, and they're basically in a stable with some high walls.
Do you know what it was called, the hacienda?
Nah.
Or is it lost to time?
It's still there. Actually, it's a national monument
about to ask that, because like you know how we like memorialize like battlegrounds and stuff like that. Does that kind of go in the same sense, like I could probably find this place now today?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, here's what's crazy. Depending on what battlefield you're at when you're visiting for the Civil War, there's a lot of people from the South who get annoyed because Gettysburg is done up to the nth degree because the Union won that battle, and it's the battle that turned the war over. You can go to other battles where the Confederacy won, and it's a couple of road markers. So now the same thing goes on down here in Mexico where there is some sympathy towards the French cause, if you will. And there are people who truly wanted them there, thought it was going to make the whole country better for the effort. But we're going to get to that towards the very end here once we get to our human interest piece, just how complicated of a legacy these guys have. But now our badass French Foreign Legion dudes are now completely surrounded in this hacienda.
Yeah, they're actually in the stable of the hacienda because there were Mexican forces in the main part of the house. So they had to, put on their defense out of this stable. And again, you're starting out with 65 guys. They lost some guys in the early part of this fight. Now they're retreated back to this hacienda. And while they're awaiting the next attack from the Mexicans, Captain Jeanneau has a
Jean
bottle.
Jean
Dangeau. He takes a bottle of wine and passes it around to the remaining guys that are there and has them swear an oath on his wooden prosthetic hand that they're going to fight to the death. There's not going to be any surrendering going on here.
They were offered several surrenders, by the way.
Three or four times they kept on being that offer of surrender, and it was refused. His response was, "We still have supplies and ammunition, so there's no surrender. We will not surrender."
I have a quote for you at the end of this, too, by the way.
Okay. So then the battle continues and then back and forth, and then finally it's down to, I think it was like five guys that are left out of the 65 that started. There is now a lieutenant that took over from Captain Danjou.
He was killed
because
by a sniper.
He was killed. He was shot in the chest, I believe, in the second or third wave type of a thing. And that just pissed off the remaining legionnaires even further that, you know, now it's definitely a fight to the death. Mm-hmm. And they come down to, I believe it was five or six guys. I believe it was five that they're out of ammunition. They got one shot left. Each guy has now one shot left remaining, and they fix bayonets and charge the Mexicans, fire off their last shot, and now they're completely surrounded. And then the Mexican officer calls it off. He like blocks the Mexicans with his own sword type of thing. Don't kill them kind of a thing. Offers them one more time to surrender, and the legionnaires come back with, if you take care of our wounded and allow us to keep our arms and remaining supplies, which they didn't have any, then we'll think about it, right? Then the Mexican officer was like, holy shit, how can you refuse these guys that they're willing to be, at this point, bayoneted to death rather than surrender? So they, you know, there was three guys that were still answering the call. In other words, or fit for service. That although they might have been wounded, they were still being able to put up some type of a fight. The two remaining wounded were then cared for by the Mexicans, and they were later exchanged. But this became a defining moment for the Legionnaires. It's remembered on their anniversary every year. And Captain Danjou's wooden hand is still with us today and is proudly displayed.
I knew a kahuna dove right on the computer. You got to see this shit, dude. Wait till you fucking see it. Here's the pronunciation's crazy, but look for Dan. So, okay, you already found him. Now find his hand.
All I got to do is find his hand.
Yep. Oh, dude, this is unreal shit. Dude,
Jean Danjou.
No way.
That will be on the Instagram page, by the way, for everybody.
His wooden hand is encased. And one of the major honors for any legionnaire is that as they parade this thing around once a year, to be the guy that gets to carry Captain Danjou's wooden hand and put on display.
That's like unreal, man.
A major, major honor type of a thing. So
now here's the best part. The quote from the Mexican forces, the leadership when they were exchanging the surrender.
Right.
They said, there's only three men left. He goes, those aren't men. Those are demons.
Yeah, there was a demons or devils.
Right? Oh, my God. Could you imagine? I mean, it is just it is wild shit with that, man.
Yeah, because when these five guys, the two wounded and the three that were still answering the call, when they were brought forth, I was like, well, where's the rest of them? You know, the Mexican leader was like, well, where's the rest of these guys? That's it. That's all that's still alive. And he says that those aren't men. Those are devils or demons.
Yeah, this was in my head, I thought for this episode we were just going to cover the Battle of Puebla. But it was unreal just to get into this part of the story because you found this. I did not find this.
Yeah.
This was something you found. Now, the other crazy part here is that that's going on. So now you understand the measure of the resolve of France's decision to Napoleon's not getting into this light-handedly. As soon as they lose that first Battle of Puebla, he actually sends over more troops.
Right.
And there's a second Battle of Puebla.
Right.
Where they wind up at – because France eventually succeeds. They do take over the country.
They do take over the country.
So
– and this is – we have to bring out this point. This whole thing was really coming about because the Americans are too busy fighting one another in the Civil War that early on in the Civil War, the Confederates were winning victory after victory. And although the Confederate States of America was announced with the secession of the Confederacy, it wasn't being recognized by the international community, if you will. And the Confederates would very much like to be recognized internationally with the British and with the French and everybody else, all these trading partners that the Southern states had prior to the Civil War, that if they could be declared their own separate country by international powers, that would be an absolute game changer because then the Union blockade that's going around all these southern ports during the Civil War, well, now you're interfering with free trade type of a thing.
And we were not a superpower yet at this point.
And we're bringing in, then the Confederacy is bringing in major allies, if you will, namely the French and the British and everybody else who might wanted to have something to do with the cotton trade and the rice trade at the time. Mr. Seward, William Henry Seward, is our Secretary of State for the Union, and he's letting it be known, stay the hell out of Mexico, although we can't do anything right now, especially in the early part of the war. We had enough problems trying to figure out fighting the Confederates.
Yeah, fucking neighbors, right?
Yeah, right. don't be breaking up our brawl type of thing. And that's, again, why Napoleon III was looking to get into Mexico because that would be a huge, huge ploy for him to get a foothold into the North American continent. But Seward was pretty shrewd in that, he's telling them to stay out and don't get involved, although we had no teeth. By 1863, though, in our own country, in the United States – the Union finally starts to have some victories, namely Gettysburg, and they also had on July 4th of 1863, they had a big victory in Vicksburg, which was controlling the Mississippi River or a good part of the Mississippi River. So things are starting to turn. So had we not had Union victories at Gettysburg on 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of July 1863, and then on the 4th of July 1863, the victory at Vicksburg, things might have gone completely different for this country. So, you know, as we're the American losers here, this was a game changer with those two victories.
Which is a great point, because literally right now it's just a giant game of Risk that's being played here. Yep. All right, a lot of crazy shit going on. But now Mexico's getting a little spooked here. They realize that France is not going away. A French general, General Foray, was able now to take Mexico City, and the resistance under Juarez largely seems defeated. This is when our boy Maximilian shows up. Okay, so we're way good. So Maximilian I has now accepted the title of Emperor of Mexico under the condition that he, you know, is being controlled by Napoleon III. But he arrives in his new country. He is unaware until he leaves, however, that his decision strips him of all rights and titles of the Habsburg dynasty, of which he'd been a part of the ruling class.
Right.
They don't tell him until after he leaves.
Right.
He goes, hey, guys, I'm going on vacation down to Florida. Oh, by the way, as soon as you leave, you're fucking fired.
That's right. You're out. You're out.
So,
yeah, so as soon as he accepts the position as the new emperor of Mexico, he cuts or all the ties back to Europe with the Habsburg Empire are cut, are severed. So he's hanging out in the wind there at that point.
So very interesting guy here. Now he arrives. Max's rule does, however, earn the blessing of the Pope himself. So that idea of Latin America is now still very much a real thing. But the incumbent, President Juarez, refuses to acknowledge his rule. You know, Maximilian arrives with his wife, Carlota, or Carlotta.
Carlotta.
Or Salma Hayek.
That's
yeah, right.
Well, she's actually Austrian, too, from what I read.
No, I believe she was Belgium. She wasn't Austrian.
I'm sorry. European is what I should have said.
Right.
Because Carlota makes you think that you're dealing with, you know, one of them sassy Puerto Rican girls.
But she's also related to Carlotta is from royal family and is like a cousin to Queen Victoria of England. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, she's got a bloodline kind of a thing. And that whole European thing is so screwed up that who's marrying who's cousin. And because I think, if I'm not mistaken, Maximilian marries Carlotta, who happens to be like a second cousin. And she's also a cousin of Queen Victoria. So there's a lot of he and she. And it's a Game of Thrones in the real world.
Very much so. Nothing's weirder though than the World War I stuff that's coming, because when you literally every country that's at war with one another is related to the other people. So just a brutal Thanksgiving. Now Carlota, she's interesting. She becomes the Empress of Mexico, if you will. And the two of them immediately notice the considerable dire straits of the poor in Mexico versus the haciendas of the rich. Now what's crazy is the people in the haciendas are the ones who want him there. Okay, so that's all the people that brought it, but he still has sympathy for the poor. But he and his damn meddlesome wife coming over here with their stupid white privilege, meddling stupid Europeans, decide that they're going to come over.
Would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you meddling kids.
Yeah, they're going to make some changes, okay? Time for Mexican culture to get a little bit of a shakeup. So they choose Mexico City as their seat and the location for their eventual coronation. Which, by the way, never happens. That's how unstable everything is.
They were never really coronated.
No, that's what gets a little terrifying here on them. That's how dicey everyday life was for them. But again, these meddling people, man, these are I mean, this Maximilian guy, he's a real fucking asshole, if you ask me. First thing he does, restricts the work hours and abolishes child labor. Dick.
We needed that. Yeah, right, come on. Yeah,
these kids today have no work ethic.
That's right.
He also forgave all debts for peasants above 10 pesos.
Oh, what a dick.
Yeah, douchebag. It kind of reminds me of when Mr. Agrati became – he was the woodshop teacher in middle school. I got along with really well, liked him. And then he got made because he was in the Coast Guard. They made him I guess the vice principal. Yeah, I think he was the vice principal. And his first act is it was sophomore year of high school that he took over. And so sophomore year of high school, he takes over in his first announcement to our entire, you know, sophomore classes. Guys, I'm taking over because the other guy, you know, had stepped down. He goes, so if you had a detention that you, you know, didn't serve, I don't know about it. So you're getting, you know, pretty much a clean slate. And I just heard people start booing that. Because they're like, we could have fucking, you know how many classes I could have skipped? So imagine you're sitting there and you have a 9 peso debt, okay? And then they find out that anything above 10, is getting forgiven by new Emperor Maximilian, and you're like, I could have gone to one titty bar and had just clean slate, but no, I decided to be a good Catholic. So anyway,
I decided to be good this time.
Yeah, other stuff he decides to do. He restores communal property. Okay, that was like a big thing that Caesar did. When Caesar died, he gave a lot of his lands and everything away to the people, and that's what caused a lot of the uprising for him. So whenever you give something back to the people, they tend to remember you fondly. But restores all that. He also abolishes all forms of corporal punishment. All right, and this does not sit well with the haciendas now. All right, he's getting so the haciendas bring him over because they're all mostly the conservatives. And again, this is not conservative in a modern sense either. So there's no political nature to the show ever. But it does make me laugh though that the people that brought him over, like, ooh, this guy's a little. He's not quite on board with the shit like we thought he was going to be.
He's a little too liberal.
So, but get this: the liberals hate him because he's still too conservative. So every time you try to meet in the middle, somebody still hates
you. He's not making friends on either side.
So
everyone just hates everybody.
Yeah, that's the crazy part here. Now, much to his original supporters' dismay, Max kept and expanded some of President Juarez's policies on land reforms. Get this one. The Pope blesses you, but you still advocate for religious freedom in your own country. All right.
Everybody hates Max.
Not exactly, not exactly the Latin America vibe that they were going for with kind of a consensus Catholicism. But he also decides he wants to expand the right to vote beyond just the landowners.
Wow.
I mean, what the hell, Max? Max's policies now find himself enemies on both sides of the aisle. He attracts even more attention now from the United States because he goes ahead and starts inviting Confederate soldiers to relocate in Mexico. So if you don't want to surrender and go back to your life over there and face the possible punishments of the Union Army,
come hang out here.
If you want to keep riding south, man, come on down. It's nice. We sell beer in gas stations. Come on down, dude. All right. It's a good time. What happens down in Mexico stays in Mexico, as Kenny Chesney taught me.
They even started carving out parts of Mexico to be called like New Virginia type of a thing. So all these Confederate veterans would have a new home.
I can't move there if I can't pronounce it, Larry. All right. Quetzalcoatl?
We need a New Virginia.
Right.
So now the other thing too is he also starts saying, well, if other people from Europe want to move here. Now he's trying to open up Mexico. The same way that the United States was, the original, America itself, rather, kind of had a thing where you had the French coming over, the Dutch coming over, the Spanish coming over, the English coming over, everybody. So he's now inviting Europeans to come relocate into Mexico. Now, there is this kind of fear kind of a thing that you're going to have all these people coming over here now, and you're never actually addressing the problems that are being faced by the poor in Mexico at the time. So a lot of mixed emotions going on in this one. But by inviting all these other people, especially the Confederates, you've now pissed off the Americans a little bit, and they get a little warning. They said, hey, our little Civil War is wrapping up, if not wrapped up already, and we've decided we're going to go ahead and start to enforce that Monroe Doctrine that you guys called our bluff on. So they continue to put more and more pressure on Napoleon III until the U.S. actually forces him to remove his troops from Mexico. So Napoleon III.
By this time it's like 1864, 1865. The American Civil War is winding down. It's pretty apparent by that point in time that the Union is going to win this thing. And, old Napoleon III is looking at that. Well, maybe it's time to pull back. Plus, he's also got his own problems.
Yeah, he's fighting a war with Prussia.
Right.
So he needs all the troops he can get.
Napoleon III is fighting a war with Prussia, and I got troops in Mexico. Well, maybe it's time to scale back again and tighten up and, circle up the wagons back here at home. And because now we've also got the Americans that are pissed off, and we don't want to have them start to come across the border.
And they're fresh off a war right now, too. Right. So they're ready to – they're as battle-hardened as they're going to be. So. Now, he also warns Max, though. So our boy Napoleon III does warn our boy Max, tells him, hey, dude, I got to roll. I got to take my boys with me. I need him over here. Now, Napoleon, like you said, the way I phrased it made it sound like Napoleon. I don't think he ever landed in Mexico.
No, Napoleon III never made it to Mexico. He was pulling the strings from Europe. And sending in Maximilian was his way of keeping control because he was controlling Maximilian. But yeah, you're right. Napoleon III did tell Maximilian that I got to pull the troops out. Maybe you ought to. It's time for you to do the skedaddle. But you got to remember, he was disinherited, if you will, once he left.
So where's
for
he going to go?
Mexico. So yep. Where's he going to go? So he's staying put.
You could go back to France, but they're currently getting the shit kicked out of them by the Prussians. Really not a whole lot of good stuff going here.
Right.
But Max, to his credit, and this is how fondly remembered he is, he had a couple of major things. We talked about some of his actual reforms, but he also had a giant avenue carved through the center of Mexico City, which is still standing to this day. It's known as Paseo de la Reforma, which is a wide avenue cut through there. And that was where his seat was going to be in Mexico City. Now, he's so loyal to the people that are loyal to him that he decides he's not going to leave and abdicate his throne unless his supporters feel like he should. But he's still got he's got Austrian dudes that are backing him up over there. He's got Mexican aristocracy that's backing him up over there. There's still plenty of people that are making him feel popular. Rest of the world sees that it's not going so good for him. But in Mexico, they're allowing, you know, Max is able to keep people motivated enough that he thinks maybe this is still going to work out. So,
as I can keep the investors happy.
That's right. Right.
Excellent
maybe
point
there's
too.
A chance.
Excellent point. Well, the diehard Max fans go ahead and they get their wish. The emperor decides he's going to remain. But one of Max's policies, we talked about all the good ones here, all right? I try to paint a sympathetic picture of him, and he is truly a sympathetic character. But one of Max's policies that really is the undoing for him, it's known as the Black Decree, which never sounds good to begin with, okay?
Yeah, considered Big Kahuna intrigued. What is this?
So the Black Decree essentially states that all members of paramilitary and paragovernmental bodies were to be arrested, given a court-martial, and if found guilty, executed, all within 24 hours.
Wait, what?
So if you are part of a usurpacious group, okay, anybody standing in his way, so that the Juarez people, all right, if there's a group that's – like let's say we'll use the modern context right now. Actually, we'll put it all the way in the past.
So let's say we had some people that didn't like American Loser. We would now have to –
Yeah.
Well, the option to get rid of them?
Well, if they wanted the same time slot we had, we started recording at noon today, right? And somebody else said, well, we want noon. And then I was like, well, you know, I'm going to round you up and have you killed.
Huh.
I can't have you standing in my way.
Maybe we should implement that.
That's it. Well, we do have enough studios right now, right, Bang? Anyway, he issues this black decree, and this really is – this is what does him in, all right? It states that all members have to be executed, and after their trial, it's this also within 24 hours. This is kangaroo court shit.
They're also, like, announcement starts right. Happening.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of – there's that scene in one of the early Thanksgiving episodes of South Park where they put all the turkeys into the mill, and then they show all the turkeys a nice movie on the screen, and then a buzzsaw comes from across the room and just takes everybody's heads
except
off all at once.
One.
It's a – Gobbles! So but things are going a little bit crazy here. It is estimated that the Black Decree resulted in the death of over 11,000 of President Juarez's supporters.
Yeah, so 11,000 guys are being executed because they opposed Maximilian's government.
So
basically it's what it boiled down
now,
to.
Now, if he hadn't have done that, I think he really would have won a lot of people over.
Yeah.
Because this was a good man.
Especially with
accounts.
All the land reforms
but
and everything
just
else
executed.
He was doing for the common guy. But yeah.
But he just executed a lot of people.
And the speed with which it was carried out, too, I mean, that was a complete
quick.
Revolt. Yeah. These weren't fair. It reminds me a lot of – we always talk about it, but the 1916 Easter Uprising in Ireland. The people, when they were captured after the uprising, were being spit on and had rocks thrown at them and stuff like that. But then when the British government executed the Irish rebels, you know, a lot of them without trial and seemingly over, they had to sit one guy up in a chair in order for him to stand to be shot.
Because he couldn't – because of his wounds, he couldn't stand. So they just sat him in a chair and shot him.
That was Connolly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they actually made them martyrs. So the same way now that these Juarez guys were like, you know, we're now all of a sudden the aggrieved. Okay,
yeah.
So they're saying, also, are you going to let this outsider, this European, is going to come over here to Mexico and start killing Mexicans? We're just going to let it happen. So in 1866 now, the Mexican resistance is seething. The last of Napoleon's troops have left Mexico, and Max's own wife returns to Europe, as my father said, to seek help for her husband's empire from their families back home. She would never return to Mexico. Within 1 year, the Mexican empire had fallen. Max rounded up his loyalist army and fought against the Mexican Republican forces in several battles and a long eventual siege. He was known for showing a lot of great courage during the siege, by the way. Even his enemies liked him. That's when you know you're doing something interesting. But now, today is Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May. Well, a few years later, on the 16th of May, following the fall of his garrison and a failed escape plan, By the way, Max's escape plan was to he was going to be escorted out by some hussars, that they were going to be the ones blockading him to let the emperor escape here, but it was not going to be allowed. Max is captured by the Juarez loyal forces. He is court-martialed and sentenced to death. Now, President Juarez himself, who likes Max, really thinks highly of the guy. He likes him on a personal level, but he goes, there's no way I can't kill this guy for what he just did, you know, in the Black Decree. So him ordering that, you know, 11,000 people be killed, there's blood for blood kind of a thing on this one. You can't allow that guy to walk out of here. So they go ahead and they sentence him to death as both vengeance for the Black Decree and a warning to the other European powers that Mexico's independence is not for sale anymore. Quit meddling over here. Yeah. Right, gringos?
Just in case you noticed, the last guy you sent is now dead, so
that's right.
Stay the hell out of Mexico.
Now, they put his head on a turtle and floated him out there like in Breaking Bad. So now, but this is not agreed upon, too, by the way. You're still killing a member of the European nobility, all right? So there's a lot of monarchs and noble people, and also other notable liberals such as Giuseppe Garibaldi, who is a fascinating man. He was such a potent general, if you will, in Italy, that President Lincoln had thought about placing him as the head of the Army of the Potomac during the Civil War after Robert E. Lee decided he could not stand against the state of Virginia. So anyway, all these people are pleading, don't kill him. Don't kill him. You got to do something. This is fucking royalty, man, all right? Keep in mind, this is borderline. When we talk about the royalty, we're talking about like fairies and shit almost. You know what I mean? There's a myth, like kind of a mysticism quality to it. So when you're killing the nobility, you don't have a nobility to replace that nobility, right? You got to say, come on, man, you're killing fucking the tooth fairy. But anyway, Max is executed by
semi-god. Appointed
by God to be the ruler. So right. You're going to get the wrath of God too for killing the nobility. But a lot of people felt that way too. But Max is executed by firing squad on June 19th, 1867. Max remained – get this one. This one puts the hairs on my arm standing up a little bit. This poor fucker, all right? He's a North American loser for this story. But poor Max, who had come over from Austria to become the emperor because he would never actually hold lands and titles of any sort of substance back in Austria – a popular man, a learned man, a guy who came here thinking he could do some good. He remains regal to his death. He addresses those present only in Spanish. Not bad for an Austrian. You're speaking the native tongue, all right? You weren't just showing up trying to get the job. You were living it. And he pays each soldier on his own firing line a gold coin. Imagine walking up to the hangman and tipping him.
Yeah, do a good job. So.
Hands each one of the riflemen on his own firing squad a gold coin and requests that they not shoot him in the face so that his mother might see him one more time. Okay? Yeah. So.
Oh, damn.
Now, as the orders are being commanded, okay?
Not the face.
Shoot him in the face.
He's got his two right-hand men, if you will, on his left and right, okay? The two generals that supported him the most. And so he's being killed.
Oh, they're all getting...
Yeah, well, he's being killed with his two most loyal supporters.
Okay.
So now as the commands are being given in Spanish still, our boy Max speaks out that he forgives all those who have wronged him. He forgives the men who are about to kill him. He forgives Juarez for ordering his death. He forgives the Mexican people for rooting him out. And then he just wants, you know, he said, may the blood that he's about to shed be for the good of the country. So this guy's coming over here. He's a fucking martyr now all of a sudden. I mean, it is wild. The site of the execution, Cerro de los Campanas, is now a national park in Mexico, and it is on my list of places I want to go. All right, Emperor Maximilian Chapel was also built on the site of his execution, and his body was taken back by the Austrian Navy to Vienna, where it was interned in the family crypt and can be viewed to this day. So, pretty wild stuff, man. Okay, so the Mexicans celebrate Cinco de Mayo in order to celebrate the one time they beat the French in this war that did not go their way. Now, they eventually oust the French, all right, but it takes the threat of America getting involved down there and the French forces getting removed. Following the death of Maximilian, though, President Juarez is now restored to power, and Mexico never had any sort of problems ever again.
No, never. Definitely no. Smooth sailing from
there
on.
No revolutions, no counter-revolutions, no civil wars, no bandit kings. This is all Pancho Villa leading into his kind of story here. If you don't get what I mean, by the way, just check out our episode on Pancho Villa. It is one of the most fascinating things going on here. And guys, go ahead and do me a favor. If you like the show, we're trying to go back to a weekly format for a little while. We're going to have to take a break eventually. This is the one part of the big, big announcement for the show here. We are moving to a seasonal format, okay? I'm going to sit down because, you know, between me and my dad here, we're putting, I would say, upwards of 6 hours a week we're going into trying to get each episode done. We're starting to burn out. And I don't want to put out shitty episodes. I don't want to pigeonhole something into an American loser here. There's too many great stories I want to take the time to tell properly. So we're going to keep putting these out here. We will give our loyal listeners a chance to get on board with us from the get-go because you guys have been so loyal and supportive of the show so that it's not going to cost you guys any money and you'll have all the information way before the general public gets made aware of it. But we're going to be moving to a seasonal format. We got a couple things we're working on. Other couple of big deals I can't talk about just yet. They are exciting things, though I know that's so vague and annoying, but it is what it is. So that's our big change that's going to come up here. We will be back next week. We got I want to do two episodes next week. That's my goal. We got a couple others I want to wrap up. My goal is to give you guys 40 episodes for absolutely free, okay? 40 episodes of this show for free. Thank you for being here. We're going to move into a different format as we're moving forward with the seasonal change and everything like that. And we just got to start. We can't lose money on the show anymore, all right? As great as Mike and Ming and the Kahoon have been to us here to Shared Universe. But do me a favor. If you guys like the show, hint, hint, hint. If you have not left a review for us on iTunes yet, do that, all right? Because that way I can track who's been supporting us since day one. We're going to take care of everybody, but if you leave me the review on iTunes, just say you like the show, all right? You could even leave one of those two-star reviews that some douchebag left us, all right? I wonder what ex-girlfriend did that one.
There's so many, Kev. It's really hard to pin down.
That's the problem. When you're a comedian, they're very interested in you for about 90 minutes after your show. And then once they realize, oh, wow, my boyfriend's never around on nights or weekends, and he can't wait to leave all the time, and everything's a joke, and he's going to talk about me on stage, they just don't like it. But so we're coming into the summer now. LP, you're going to be up here. We're going to have a chance to work on some more stuff here. I want to come back with this show stronger and better than ever. And, again, I appreciate everybody who does listen to it. So, guys, do me a favor if you can here. LP, do you have anything you want to say on your way out?
I just want to named this show the Cinco de Mayo type of thing. I just want to roll that into more of an American twist here, is that although it was a Mexican battle won by the Mexicans against the French, there was a large Mexican population that moved into California after the war with Mexico. And those Mexican Americans who are now living in California got the news about this great victory at Puebla. They were the ones that really ramped up the whole Cinco de Mayo celebration. Actually, the world's largest Cinco de Mayo celebration takes place in Los Angeles, not in Mexico, not in anywhere else, but our own Los Angeles. You know that which Los Angeles, California, was previous a Mexican territory, if you will. You know, and I just—it's an American way. You know, if there's a reason to have a party and celeberate and get shit-faced, well, everybody's in, right?
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day is a Catholic holiday,
right? You don't have to. Yeah, it's a religious holiday known as St. Patrick's Day. You don't have to be Irish to have a good time with that. Just put on a plastic green friggin' derby hat, and you have no idea why you're drinking or why you're celebrating, but have a good time. Well, you know. Isn't that the American way?
Why we love everybody, man. That's again, the title of the episode is all about cultural appropriation. In this instance, it's a good thing.
Yeah, we are the melting pot, and God bless America.
I hear you guys. So do me a favor if you can. Cahoons, congratulations on your film getting into the film festival, by the way. Very happy for you on that one. And you know you're a huge part of this show moving forward, so we're never going to fucking be rid of you. I was made very aware of that. again,
you couldn't get rid of me if you tried.
No, that's also true. But you've been here since day one, dude. How are we going to do it without you?
Yes, here's what's going to end up happening. If something does happen, you know how we had that little Homer Buddha here for a long time? I'm going to get one made that it's going to be me instead of Homer. So it's going to be my head.
And you guys just gonna have there
to,
on the shelf.
You guys are just going to have to stare at that.
Yes, there you go.
Perfect.
Be like, Cahoon is your
rub
spirit.
His belly for good luck.
But guys, if you like this show, check us out. We're on SoundCloud, and we're also on iTunes, obviously. Anywhere you want to listen to podcasts for the most part. I'm working on trying to grow the show as we continue here. Like I said, leave me the review now, because let's just say if we move to a pay format moving forward, which would be very affordable, by the way, anybody who leaves us a review on iTunes, I will take care of. So that being said, guys, do me a favor. And today on Cinco de Mayo, I'm not sure because I know Ming's going to edit this one fast for us. I don't know if it'll come out on Cinco de Mayo or the day or two after, but it will be available by Tuesday at the absolute latest. Tuesday, lose day, baby. Do me a favor and have a beer in honor of Mexican Pride. Have a shot in honor of the French Foreign Legion. And in the morning, grab yourself a Gatorade and a breakfast sandwich because your head hurts just like Maximilian I. All right, guys, thank you so much for everything. This was a great show. LP, thanks for doing it with me. Cahoons, thanks for giving a part of your Sunday, bud.
Of course.
Guys, my name was KP Burke, and that was Cinco de Mayo, American Loser.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. American loser the day I was born.